Right, laying a good foundation for English. Have you used English today? English is our language. It's how we communicate. For most of us, it's our first language, not all. So when do we start teaching English? When a child hears his first English word, he has begun to learn. So I credit my mom for teaching me to enjoy English. She liked saying it right. How will we lay a good foundation for English? Isaiah 28 verse 10 says, "For precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little." Rule number one, speak correct English yourself. Be willing to learn. When you hear a word pronounced differently than what you're used to, look it up in the dictionary and be willing to admit you've been saying it wrong all these years and try to remember to say it correctly. And correct yourself. When you hear yourself make a mistake, oh, and then say it the right way. We get our students to do corrections. And it'll help it stick in your own head if you hear it correctly, and it shows your students that you care about English beyond the lesson. Rule number two, model correct English. Out on the playground, someone says, "I should have ran to third." Repeat it. You should have run to third, and you won't get every time they say it wrong, because after all, we're playing hard and they aren't even listening necessarily. Or there's three turkeys on the driveway. There are three turkeys on the driveway. You don't have to stop them and say, "Wait a minute, brother, you need to say," just say it correctly and they'll hear it. And it's one more time that they heard it right. Other common errors that I've heard around here are use. Use all came to my class. Use is something you do. You use something. You aren't use. Okay. Have went. So today I go, yesterday I went, every day I have. Say it. Gone. Good. I tell my students it sounds right to them because that's how they've always heard it. And if they learn to say it correctly, then their grandchildren will think this is an easy lesson in English because they've always heard it right. Which is so far-fetched for them, but it's still fun to tell them. Rule number three, follow the teacher's guide. Don't skip anything in the teacher's guide. Idealistically. Especially in the younger grades, though, I would say don't skip anything. Especially if you're using the revised grade 2 and 3 English. Those teacher's guides are very well set up. So this should perhaps be rule number one, follow the teacher's guide. That's why it's there. How many of you use revised grade 2 and 3 English? How many of you use the old books? Okay, all right. How many of you teach grades 1 to 3, somewhere in there? And how many of you teach grade 4 or older? Okay, all right, just so I know who I'm talking to. You know, the class time review, a lot of that stuff you can do pretty fast, right? Try to keep it fast. If they're sitting there dreaming about anything else, then it's not really useful anymore. But keep it snappity and then it's helpful. All right, let's move into the parts of speech, beginning with nouns. Nouns, name? Good. Here's a test. Can you see it? Can you touch it? Then it's a noun. Occasionally they'll call a verb a noun. Run, I can see run. Can you touch it? No, it's something you do, right? It's not a thing, person, place, or thing. That's the other thing. Is it a person, place, or thing? All right, on your handouts, there's the noun song. there by the houses. You know that tune? Raise your hand if you know it. Okay, good. Sing it with me. Let's sing the first verse, which is up at the top, and let's skip the common nouns verse, and then sing the last one because I like those proper nouns in there. Okay, just so you don't fall asleep. No, Oh, let's look around for some naming words for persons and places and things. Oh, a noun is a name, yes, a noun is a name for a person or a place or a thing. It's a noun, it's a noun, it's the name of anything. Any persons, any places, anything from hats to laces, it names persons and places and things. Last verse. Oh, let's look around for some proper nouns of persons and places and things. Oh, a proper noun, yes, a proper noun of a person or a place or a thing. Canada, Mexico, Fort Witch, Clifford, or United States. Susie, Bobby, Johnny, Sally, Flossie, Trixie, King, or Molly. They name persons and places and things. So you can see I stuck Fordwich and Clifford in there because that's our local towns, but you can do that wherever you are. All right. One concept about nouns that can be a little more difficult for some children in grades 4 and 5, maybe, is the singular possessive, plural, and plural possessive. Have you ever seen a child doing this? Yeah. So I haven't taught those grades now for a bit, or the students I had were pretty good with it. So I asked Marie Brubaker, who taught me in grades 3, 4, and 5, what she does. Well, she said, yes, that can be a difficult concept. One thing that she does do sometimes is divide it, and she'll have singular and singular possessive. So we go with the singular to make it singular possessive. We just add apostrophe X to every one, right? Boxes, toys, child, and sheep. Then we can, and I wish I would have gotten her to explain better how she goes about having two charts, because you know in their book it's like all one chart. But if we change these all over here to plural, we have foxes, toys, and they don't need to be worrying about making it possessive right now, children, and sheep. And now we take this plural, so we're not thinking about this one, we're just thinking about these plural ones, just to kind of divide it up for them. And every plural that ends with an S, we add an apostrophe to, correct? That's the rule. Foxes, toys, apostrophe. And then if it doesn't end with an S, we add apostrophe S. Make sense? So hopefully that can help. Do you have any questions or things that you find in English are more difficult for you on nouns right now, particularly? And if you think about it later, you can ask later. All right, let's move on to verbs. A verb is a word that shows
action.
Excellent. Did we arrive at school early? What are the verbs? Say them.
Did arrive.
Right. Oh, what's the color for verbs? I forget right now. Green, right? In the revised, that's another good thing, is color coding. Oh, and I remember all the other things I'm forgetting. There are also charts. Here's a noun chart. Persons, places, things. Proper and common nouns. Singular and plural nouns. All right, verbs. Verbs show action or being. Action verbs tell what a person or thing can do. All right, so the test for action verbs is, can you do it? And a word that a child might pick out here is early. Is early a verb? Can you do it? And they're like, yep, I can get out of bed early. And I'm like, no, but can you early? Okay, I want you to early. Can you early? No, early is not a verb. You can't early. All right, let's go to the other song. Beside the noun one, we have the verbs, and that one is the tune, There Was a Girl Who Always Smiled. S.M. Miley. So we will sing verses 1 and 2. So then we are going to act them out as we sing them. See in verse 2, it says to act out as you sing them, S-T-A-N-D-M-A-R-C-H-J-U-M-P. So I want you to stand and march just on the spot, okay? And I didn't say this for my students this year when I first sang this song, so they were marching forward from the class bench. So just, it would have been smarter if I would have said something. You don't have to stand. Oh, no, hang on. You have to wait to stand until we get there. Sorry. It's very, very important for a teacher to be clear, right, with what she expects. So excuse me there. Now so, some words, now things that you can do, and verbs are what we call them, VRBS, 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 and verbs are what we call them. Here are some action words for you to act at as you sing them. You can sit down. See, if you sing the next verse, then you would have to walk and squat and sit down. So you have them back where you started off. All right. But we said verbs show action or being. Memorize the being verbs so they can recognize them. Can you say them for me?
Am, is, are, was, were, be, been, being.
Awesome. I like your choral togetherness. It's definitely one thing I'm working on this year. I have 9 students in grade 2, and they would all like to be the chief, or at least about 6 or 7 of them. And so you have to say it faster or slower or louder or quieter or lower or higher. You did great. An idea from the Rodney Leibold's topic at, I think it was a Christian Education Day 2 years ago, was sing the being verbs up the scale and down again. Do you remember that? So here. No, these words are always, always verbs. Now sing them down with me. Am, is, are, was, were, be, been, being. So, and I kind of like that. I did it maybe once or twice with my students. Just a fun little thing. Memorize the 15 helping verbs. Can you say them, starting with have?
Have, has, had, do, does, did, may, might, must, can, could, shall, should, will, would.
Yes, you do excellent at singing together. So chant them over and over. And here is where you teachers with multi-grade classrooms that can hardly get all your classes in are at an advantage, because the students are hearing them more times. They're hearing them if you're teaching grades 1 to 3. When they are in grade 2, they're hearing grade 3 say them, and actually when they're in grade 1 already, so they can start learning ahead of time. And then you can say, oh, right, Andrea, can you say them for me? But you don't need to. And then they all want to show that they can do that. Here's a more difficult verb concept, and that is tense, past, present, and future. At Cedarville, we don't do English in grade 2. And then in grade 3, we jump right into the grade 3 English. Most of the time, it works fine. But my third graders last year did struggle with deciding if the verb was present tense or past tense. So we have dad drove to town. Present, past, how in the world would you know? Because you are talking about what dad just did, and you say dad drove to town. So I went back to the grade 2 book and photocopied the lessons that cover the tenses in the grade 2 book. So again, this is the revised, and it was loose leaf. It was pretty easy to stick the papers in the copier, and it would shoot them out, and I can staple them together. And so remember, this is second grade work for third graders, so it was super easy learning see, saw, have seen. No, hang on, that would have been see, saw, will see. And so it was easy lessons. So we did 2 a day, actually. And then we came back to the third grade work, and they could do it much better. Building is easier when the foundation's laid. When studying the irregular forms of verbs, I already kind of mentioned this, like go, went, have gone, see, saw, have seen. Listen to what your students are saying, their conversations. to hear again which ones are used incorrectly in your area. One I heard one of my students keep saying was, he brang this to school, or somebody else brang this. And so it was an opportunity for me to say, they brought it, but I don't think he even heard it. It was during lunchtime or something. So when you hear those or you're studying them, encourage them to listen to mistakes. I like to tell them, see if you can hear one of the upper graders say it wrong. Oh, that makes them feel big if they can. They actually did hear somebody. Then I know they actually learned it. If they can hear it, somebody else saying it wrong, obviously they learned it, or maybe they knew it before. Hopefully they're also listening to themselves. As well, anything else on verbs for present past? Do you have any ways to make that one work? Right, past and present. So you have a snowman and then a melted one. So draw the pictures and a bud and then the flower. Sure enough. I saw that in the teacher's guide and I didn't do it. I think, whoa. Practice what you preach. Anything else on verbs? Okay, let's go on to pronouns. The pronouns, we have the different cases. Subject. Oh, and I'll just show you these charts so you can be jealous if you don't have them yet and you can order them. These are verbs, helping verbs. These helping verbs are pretty small words if you want to see them from your class bench or their desks, so you might want to just print out your own. Present and past, irregular verbs. All right, pronouns. So we have the subject pronouns, object pronouns, and possessive pronouns, and they hit them one after the next. And we use subject pronouns where we use subject pronouns, we use object pronouns where we use object pronouns, and you have to decide whether it is subject or object in this case, and that can be a lot for them. Here's a list of drill that, again, I got from Sister Marie Brubaker. So every day, do this, if you can. So I write subject on the board, and then I say, give me the subject pronouns. And while I am writing them down, they need to keep saying them over and over and over again. Are you, he, she, it, we, they? Are you, he, she, it, we, they? And if they start saying them so fast that they don't know what they're saying, make sure they are saying the words, right? Not, are you, she, it, they? Are you, they? Right? That's not helpful anymore. So they have to be saying it. All right, give me the subject pronouns.
Are you, he, she, it, we, they? Are you, he, she, it, we, they? Are you, he, she, it, we, they? Are you, he, she, it, we, they?
Good. All right, where do we use subject pronouns? Say it. Subject and predicate nominative. All right, so then diagram a couple. You probably can't see it here. We have they eat. So you can get them to give the sentences. If they're really slow at coming up with sentences, then you might want to just make them. They eat. My brother is he. And is that awkward or what? Oops, brother. Brother is Martha. All right, renames the subject. Brother is he. I've come to the conclusion we usually don't say that one correctly. It's not that we don't say sentences like that. We think when we're reading them in the English book that they sound strange, but I've come to the conclusion we don't usually. If I say, someone asks, so which one of these was your student? I might say she was, or I might say, I probably would say she was, right? Her, I might say her, but it was she. Who was the itter that caught you? It was him. It was?
He.
Right, okay. Then the object pronouns, same thing. All right, give me the object pronouns.
Me, you, him, her, it, us, them. Me, you, him, her, it, us, them. Me, you, him, her, it, us, them. Me, you, him, her, it, us, them.
Good. And where do we use object pronouns?
Object, object, object,
Excellent. direct object, object of the preposition. In grade three, they learn, instead of object of the preposition, they learn that it answers the questions to whom, for whom, from whom, at whom, something like that. It's a little vague. Actually, I liked it though, how the grade three revised again. I'm sorry, if you are not teaching revised, I'm gonna make it sound like it's a hopeless case. I hope you don't feel that way, but I hope it's a conversation you can take up with your school board, I guess, because it's almost time to reorder books. So, all right, back to our object pronouns. So then you can just diagram a couple sentences quick. Cow kicked her. Who received the action? Her. Cow kicked her. Train waited for them. And I do show them where it gets diagrammed. Here, I'll just do it up here so you can actually see it. Train waited, for. So the preposition goes here, and then the object of the preposition goes on that little line, for them. That's the object. All right, same thing with the possessive pronouns. How many of you memorize the possessive pronouns? I never did until I taught them last year, I think. And suddenly, it's actually not even that hard. Do you know them? Can you say them? All right, give me the possessive pronouns.
My, mine, your, yours, his, hers, hers, its, our, ours, their, theirs.
Excellent. Some of you have them memorized. I sure didn't when I was in school. Didn't know that that was actually important even until I had to do it. All right, so again, this list of daily drill. Write the title, say, give me the pronouns, and where do we use them, and then diagram them. Fun little thing about this chart is it actually introduces them to those big words that, you know, so they've been learning that they're subject pronouns, and suddenly, what is it, grade five, they learn that they're nominative case. Well, here, they get to figure that out already in grade three, and if they want to anyways, and I might just say it, this is nominative case, but that's such a big word that it's too hard for you. So we just call them subject pronouns. Then they really want to remember that they're nominative case pronouns. And then the pronouns that tell which, do you know what those are? This, that, these, those. And do you know what the hard word is for them? It's demonstrative. And isn't that the right way to say it? I was gonna relook that up because my teacher figured that out when I was in his classroom. Brother Robert, actually. I remember the conversation about that. And so then I can tell them that it looks like demonstrate. When you're demonstrating, you say, this is how you do it, and then you do that and the other thing. So they're demonstrative pronouns. And so they really like to call them demonstrative pronouns. Made them feel big. All right. Anything else on pronouns? Okay. Adjectives. Adjectives modify
nouns and pronouns.
Nouns and pronouns. They tell. Good. And this chart says, first of all, we have the articles, and then which, whose, how many, what kind of, what color, what size, what shape. But when you're chanting the definition, don't get them to say all those, because they just have to cut it off then later when their grade five teacher gets them and she's like, excuse me? So which, whose, how many, what kind of, the grade three revised does actually, I think it must be a mistake, a couple times it has it switched around and it said whose, which, how many, what kind of. Say it the same way every time, help them remember. In the grade four book, lesson 77, they have sentences and they need to put all their the words from the sentence, the articles in the first box and then the which ones and the whose ones and how many and the what kind of. Know which lesson I'm talking about or no clue? Okay, I decided after a while that actually having a chart is helpful. Maybe you do that already. So I do have some papers here, and there's a chart for you to photocopy if you want to, or make your own, because I didn't actually spend a lot of time at it. adjectives get diagrammed underneath the noun on a slanted line. These are color-coded pink, and we draw a pink line around it and put an arrow to the noun that it modifies. Whose books? Cassandra's books. All right. It tells whose, so it goes back to the noun. Adverbs modify
verbs.
Verbs.
Adjectives
Right. Oh, I forgot about the adjectives part. You don't have to teach that, of course, in grade 3. The adverbs modify other things. But it's fine to throw those things in so that when they suddenly find out that adverbs can modify other adverbs, when all their lives their teachers have been telling them that it was just verbs. So you can if you want to. They tell how, when, and where. Adverbs add to verbs. I think it's pretty neat how it's right there. Add verbs. So when you're labeling the parts of speech or you're diagramming a sentence, ask, so what does this word tell? Yesterday, those cats fought ferociously outside. What does yesterday tell? It tells when they fought. What does those tell?
Which
cats, right? Cats fought, we should have found the verb and the noun first. Anyways, ferociously tells
how,
and outside tells
where.
And the better your child's reading comprehension is, the easier that kind of work is for them. If they're not comprehending very well, then that's pretty difficult. Prepositions, which we just touched a bit in the pronouns. Preposition is a connecting word that begins a phrase. And if you teach grade 4, then that's when they actually learn the definition of a preposition and how to diagram them. And in that lesson, it says to draw a mouse nest and have draw mice in there, and they're running around, and then you can put the prepositions on there, like on the nest, over the nest, around the nest, all those things. That's a great idea, helps them see it better. Prepositions anywhere a mouse can run, or you can photocopy these onto brown or gray construction paper or whatever you want and write prepositions onto them and put them all over your classroom. So running along the chalkboard and through the window and over the chart and whatever, or you can cut off their tails and put yarn tails on, or if you're like one of my students, then you, I think it was accidentally cut the tail off, but then it was the mouse without a tail. So that was perfect then. So that's on the other side of this other chart. So I have some papers like that up here. All right, moving on to diagramming. I just like how the revised teaches is consistent in how it teaches you to find the subject and predicate. Always, number one, find the simple predicate, the verb first. So the lion crept slowly forward. Give me the verb.
Crept.
And you can start calling it the simple predicate. Grade 2 might be slightly early, but you can throw it in there. Grade 3, it's really nice if you start calling it the simple predicate. And I'll show you why in a moment. All right, what is the simple subject? To find the simple subject, we ask who or what crept. Say it.
Lion.
Lion. Lion crept. Say them together. Does that make sense? All right, not all nouns are subjects. Not all verbs are simple predicates. So that's why it's good if they are introduced to that now already. Then when they come across sentences like this, huddled in a corner of the ragged cardboard box, the shivering puppy whimpered. We have a bunch of verbs and a bunch of nouns. All right, so what is a simple predicate? Say it.
Whimpered.
All right, who or what whimpered? Corner, box, or puppy?
Puppy.
Puppy, right. So it's good for them to know. An easy one is the cat ate the mouse. Who or what ate? The mouse or the cat? Then it's pretty obvious to them that it is important to know which one. So always, always find the simple predicate first and write it first. Okay? It's easy to just, okay, I know it. This is easy. Lion crept. How hard is that? Lion crept. You know, in math, you always, always get them to add the ones place first. 23 plus 54. The answer will be the same, whether they add the tens place first or the ones place first, correct?
Yes.
correct in this case. But you get to when you have to carry, and it won't be. So it matters a lot. Same idea here in English. When you get to more complicated sentences, you will have done yourself and your students and the upper grade teacher a favor if you always find the simple predicate, the verb, first. All right, yes, we did sing that song already. No, we didn't. The subject and predicate one. And I'm not sure what tune this is. It's pretty easy though. Let's sing the first verse. Nomi. The subject tells us what or who. The subject tells us what or who. Did you know this and haven't you heard? The subject tells us what or who. All right. How many of you knew this song before? Okay, so it is a very familiar tune then, apparently, or else you're good at reading music. Good job. And then we have the other ones. The big white dog are subject words, and the predicate is the action part. I like it, except the predicate is not always the action part. Sometimes it's a being verb, right? Predicate can be a being verb as well. All right, going on to finding the direct object in diagramming. Abigail carried her tiny baby sister. So, first of all, we find the verb, orange chalk. All right, say the simple predicate. What's the simple predicate?
Carried.
Who or what carried?
Abigail.
Abigail carried whom? Is a how to find the direct object. Abigail carried whom or what? We ask whom or what about the simple subject and predicate. So, Abigail carried whom?
Sister.
Right, and that's a noun too. Then we go to diagram it. Carried, Abigail carried sister. Straight line. All right, tests to see if it is a direct object or not. Did she do something to the baby? Yes. What did she do?
Carried.
Right, she carried her. Is sister is the word there. Is sister a noun? Can you see it? Yes. You know. And my third grade last year, I just loved doing that row. Wait a minute, maybe it was the year before. So we'd go, carried. Who or what carried? Abigail. Abigail carried. And they would say it with me. Abigail carried whom? Sister. Did she do something to sister? Yes, she carried her. Is sister a noun? Can you see it? Yes. And so they had like all the, you know, proper inflection at the right spots, and they all said it together. And it's so easy, but sometimes it isn't. I don't have any examples. And so if they know that the word that is the direct object has to have the subject do something to it. And sometimes it's not a lot that they're actually doing. Like, the students listened to the teacher. Did they do something to the teacher? Right, they listened to her, so they did do something. Good. Notice that we ask whom. Abigail carried whom, not who. Did you hear the difference? I'll just write it so you for sure see it. It's whom. Same as him, right? So him is an object pronoun. He is a subject pronoun. Who is a subject? What kind of pronoun? Who came to school?
Objective.
So whom is the objective case, right? Who is the subject case? So if you can, when you are teaching grade 3, say whom. It won't be a new idea for them when they are learning who, whom, and all those in the... Oh, bugs me that I can't think of what they are. Relative pronouns? Is that what they are?
Interrogative
pronouns. Thank you. Yes. All right. Then in diagramming, we've covered the direct object. Going on to the predicate, nominative, and adjectives in grades 4 and 5. One thing you can do to help them remember what is happening is draw an arrow back to the subject. Because remember, the predicate nominative renames the subject. So grandpa was blacksmith. My grandpa was a blacksmith. So what was the simple predicate?
Was.
Simple subject?
Grandpa.
Grandpa was what?
Blacksmith.
Blacksmith, right. And that renames the subject. So you can make them draw an arrow or make the slanted line. I love that it's slanted because it's already telling us what it does. It just renames the subject. And my brother is he. So brother is he. He renames brother. You can switch it around. He is my brother. My brother is he. Those pies are delicious. What kind of pies? Delicious pies. They might get a bit confused what all the predicate nominative, predicate adjective, predicate pronoun. So you can do at the bottom, put a little capital letters of the slanted line. So at the bottom of the slanted line, put a little capital letter for N if it's a noun. My brother is he. We have is. Brother is he. And so that would be a predicate pronoun, right? So we can put a little P there just to help them keep it kind of straight. And now the question, why do we diagram? I love diagramming, so it's not hard for me to like it. It helps me understand the Bible better. In fact, the other Sunday, the minister was saying, he was taking a verse, phrase by phrase, and I was like, why are you splitting it there? Because there's a comma. Like, he did not split it at the comma. He took the part before it and the part after. And then I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. For you who are, whatever it was, 1 Peter 1 something, it made sense. Because who are, should I look it up, was telling more about for you. And so, okay, that made sense. Diagramming is a bit like algebra, is what another teacher said. It teaches your brain to think through problems logically and organize. So you hear this, I'll never use this because I'm just going to be a farmer. Well, farmers have problems to figure out. So now is a really good time to start learning how to figure out problems. So that's diagramming. Let's move on to punctuation and capitalization. Punctuation is an integral part of English. What's happening here? A panda bear eats, shoots, and leaves. How many things did the panda bear do? Say it.
Three.
Three. Right? He eats, shoots, and leaves. Okay. Without the commas, now what? How many things is he doing?
One.
He's only eating. All right. Commas make a difference. We have punctuation at the ends of sentences. They start learning it in grade one. Right? We say there's a period at the end of a sentence or a question mark or some end punctuation. So keep requiring it. Don't let them get careless with it in grade four. And again, in capitalization, the first word of every sentence begins with a? Right. And they've said it lots of times in grade two and grade one, too, I think, because they came to grade two knowing it. So if in grade three they aren't doing it, and grade four and five and six, it's not because they haven't been told before. They might just be getting careless. So if you're doing an incentive now in the middle of winter, you can add that to it if you want. Capitalization and punctuation. Don't let them lose it. And then spelling. English spellings. Don't you love them? They are interesting, definitely. One thing about them is we have differences from the American spellings to the Canadian spellings. Our books, a lot of them are American. Rod and Staff, CLE, EMP, all come from the States. So our students are seeing American spellings. Plow is spelled P-L-O-W. Did you know there is another way to spell it? I found out in grade 8 that it's there is a Canadian way to spell it. P-L-O-U-G-H. The British way, another way to say it. Of course, it's definitely not the most important thing to be teaching, but I like them to know that there is such a thing. So in their reading, I'm writing the reading words up on the board. This is in grade 2. So we have the word color. I might just do that, C-O-L-O-U-R. And I might not even say anything to them that it's different than what it will be in their reader, but just so they see it sometimes. In phonics, you're dictating words. It's fine for them to know that neighbor is an exception to the O-R that's up there in the cloud or whatever it happens to be right now. But depending on your grade, it's definitely not the most important thing, but I like them to know there is such a thing. Also in your spelling books, especially by, you know, the middle grades. If I don't tell them, who's going to tell them? Right? So something you can think about. And now for some of the fun things that we learn in English, like introductions. Do it yourself. Introduce your parents, friends, cousins, to your students and patrons and friends at church and school or anywhere. So you have your student at church and she has her little cousin along. Then you can say, Yvonne, can you introduce me to your cousin? And hopefully she's not thinking, oh yes, what did we learn in English? I think I have to say my teacher's name first, yeah, because she's older. So Sister Martha, this is my cousin, right? Introductions, the reason we learn introductions is to be polite and courteous and learn to know people. So I love doing introductions. As you can tell, it's probably not difficult for me. So I can come up here and say, Gloria, did you know that Andrea Martin used to go to the same church as I did? And once it gets beyond the introduction, that's where I have to work harder then. But the reason we learn introductions in English class is so we can get comfortable doing it. So remember that when you're teaching the lesson, it is not as important. Okay, this is Martha Penner's opinion. It is not as important that they for sure say the right person's name first and do it, you know, exactly right. The important thing is that they become comfortable saying, hi, I am pleased to meet you. That's why we have that lesson there. So, for your whatever it's worth. All right, another one of the fun parts of English is poems. Read poems to your students. Here's one my students have really enjoyed. The Monkeys and the Crocodile. How many of you know this poem? Oh, good. Not very many. Five little monkeys swinging from a tree, teasing Uncle Crocodile, merry as can be, swinging high, swinging low, swinging left and right. Dear Uncle Crocodile, come and take a bite. Five little monkeys swinging in the air, heads up, tails up, little do they care. Swinging up, swinging down, swinging far and near. Poor Uncle Crocodile, aren't you hungry, dear? Four little monkeys sitting in the tree, heads down, tails down, dreary as can be. Weeping loud, weeping low, crying to each other, wicked Uncle Crocodile to gobble up our brother. They love that poem. And I tell them, it teaches a good lesson. If you trouble trouble, trouble will trouble you. So it's not just for fun. Introduce the concept of rhythm a few days before they must do it in their lesson. Again, the grade 3 does a really good job of that. It's a great idea to do that again in grade 4. So just writing a stanza up on the board, getting them to feel the rhythm. Five little monkeys swinging from a tree, teasing Uncle Crocodile, merry as can be. And take a look at the grade 3 book if you don't remember how it should be done. And it'll help them. Finding descriptive words. in their reader or in the readers in the library. This, by the way, is the reader from the parochial schools, a revised reader. So some of the stories of the old readers were taken out. So they have really, my class has really enjoyed it. Here's the cow. Listen for describing words to describe the tongue. A patch of white, a patch of black, with spots all over the front and back. A big long tail to swish at flies, and floppy ears, the perfect size. A long pink tongue, a slobbery nose, and four sharp hooves instead of toes. She lies around and chews her hay. Fresh milk she has for us each day. Her two big eyes will look at you, but the only thing she says is moo. So what described her tongue? And what described her nose?
Slobbery.
Just love that word there, because that's exactly what a cow's nose is like. In grade 4 English and lesson 58, part C in their work says to write a sentence using these words, but the contraction of them. And I think it's he's, he has, and they're supposed to write a sentence for it. And if I hadn't had a substitute that day, I'm not sure if I would have caught it. But she made a note that a lot of them did he is instead of he has for that sentence. So I put a note in there to do it in oral drill. Have them write a sentence on the board using the contraction for she has, he is, and they will, and show them that it makes a difference. So he's gone to town. That was he has gone to town, right? If you do he's going to town, then you used he is instead of he has. So just, I don't know, one note that I saw that I had penciled in there. One other thing that I had up here, forgot to mention when we were there. This can be a quick way to shorten class. Find the three mistakes in these plural words. How many of you noticed that there were mistakes there before already? Okay, good. So the students were sitting in their desks and they already know that there's mistakes. I wouldn't do it for every class though, because for some of them, they already have so many ways to spell every word, it might not work, right? You don't need to show them another wrong way, but it can work for some. All right, back to the three rules from the beginning. Speak correct English yourself, model correct English, and follow the teacher's guide. If your student didn't conquer today's lesson, tomorrow is another day. And remember that precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little and there a little. That's the reason we review. Every year we go over nouns again, and verbs and pronouns. Review to retain and retain to review. What profit is it to forget what you knew? So line upon line, here a little, there a little. You're dismissed.